The show is sponsored by Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Dunkin' Cold K Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. It's convenient and tasty. You brew over ice, straight out of the Keurig coffee maker. You just brew over ice and you sip them in seconds. You're going to love these Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Enjoy the bold, smooth Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find Dunkin' Cold Coffee in the roasted coffee aisle. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I would need to bring a sweater because Robbie likes everything so freaking cold.
Do I?
Yes.
You are cold. You know why you're cold? Because you're shredded and ripped and
not
healthy vegan freak.
I'm not a vegan. I eat everything.
It's not true.
It is. I eat everything.
It is. Oh, I guess you're right.
I started eating red meat like a year ago, and I'm into it.
I'm very excited that you're cooking tonight for us.
I know.
You're the best cook. I mean, like legitimately, first of all, Academy Award-winning actresses should not be able to cook.
Why not?
They shouldn't. That's like mutually exclusive concept.
That's reductive. We can be more than one thing, Rob.
I haven't met many. On today's podcast of Literally with Rob Lowe, I have one of my oldest pals in show business, one of my closest friends to this day, who usually is occupying a guest bedroom in our house, Academy Award winning actress and philanthropist and business tycoon and hilarious person, great mother, Gwyneth Paltrow.
I do love cooking. I find it relaxes me. It's creative output. It's
how do you make the food look so good though? Because it's yummy, yum, yummy, but it also looks like it's been doctored by those people on the set that put glycerin on it with an eyedropper.
I don't know. All I care about is how it tastes. But I try to make it look appetizing, obviously. But I think if you're using good quality ingredients and you care about what you're doing, it always looks good in the end. You know what I mean?
That's the theory of like when you cook it for yourself, it always tastes better because you've put love into it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
How long have I known you?
I met you.
I want to hear your side of it before I give it my side.
Okay. So I met Cheryl before I met you. I met Cheryl when I was...
My wife, Cheryl. Yep.
I met Mrs. Lowe when I was 15 or 16. She was a makeup artist at the time doing... a certain Blythe Danner's makeup on
the best.
My mother.
I have my own Blythe thing, which we also need to get to.
So she was doing my mom's makeup on this TV movie, and I went in down to visit.
Was it in Florida?
It was in Florida, and I met Cheryl, and I was like immediately obsessed with her. First of all, she was dating Keanu Reeves, who was my celebrity crush.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so cool. And she knew that I was sneaking cigarettes and she would come smoke with me behind the trailer. And she taught me how to give a blowjob and, you know, all the classic Cheryl stuff. And I just worshipped her. I thought she was literally the coolest chick of all time. And she was so awesome to me. And I was a high school kid. Like, the fact that she's loved me that much before I was anyone or anything, you know, same with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it didn't work out with her and Keanu. I don't know if you're aware.
I am aware.
Okay. So sadly for me.
I am aware that I did best him in one regard.
Well.
At least one regard.
At least one. He's pretty awesome, though.
He's done okay for himself, that kid.
He's still a celebrity crush. Let's face it. Like, he's
50-something. And
he's gorgeous.
Killing it.
I'm obsessed with his girlfriend. Anyway, he has great taste in women.
Yeah, he does.
Amazing taste in women. Anyway, so then Cheryl started dating an actor named Rob Lowe, which was very exciting because, you know, Rob Lowe in the 90s was a dangerous and scintillating proposition. So.
Even if I'm purely domesticated and in the aughts, whatever we're in now.
Right. Now you're domesticated. Back then, it was another story.
Yes, it was. Oh, wasn't it, though?
Do you miss those days of just flinging your D all over town?
Here's the good news. My family doesn't listen or care about anything, any content I produce.
Perfect.
So I can say, yes, I miss it. And my wife's not going to say shit. Because I could do 300 hours of podcasts. And you know, how many hours will she listen to?
She won't, but she'll tell you she did.
Yes, 100%. So this is a free fire zone.
Yeah. So anyway, then she was dating you, which was fantastic. And then I was like staying with you guys for a while. I was staying with her for a while. And you guys were dating. And you made me really nervous because I was still like nervous of celebrities. And even though I'd grown up with my mom's friends who were celebrities, there was something more, like they were like old people, you know, but you were Rob Lowe. It was very unnerving. But can you imagine? So I've known you, I think, since I'm 17 or 18.
16 or 17. Because I remember that you, when Cheryl moved in with me to my Miami Vice.
Oh my
bachelor.
God.
Do you remember my Miami Vice bachelor pad?
Yes, I slept there multiple times.
Yeah, that you moved into the guest bedroom.
Yes.
And I remember you were either going to UCSB or.
It was before that.
Jesus Christ.
It was before that. And it was such a bachelor. It was like a spaceship on the side of a hill.
It was literally designed. Well, let's tell you all you need to know. When the realtor took me to look at the house, I bought it because it was 12 minutes away from the Hard Rock Cafe.
I don't think you should admit that.
I know. It's really bad. By the way, the notion that the Hard Rock Cafe is so bad.
But was it ever a cool place to go?
It was
Wow.
But it would be like today if that were like Leo and, you know, Timothy Chalamet.
Right.
And
all going to the
Billie Eilish.
Right.
We're getting French fries.
That is so classic. I mean, L.A. during that time.
Ugh.
It was pretty cool. I mean, I wasn't inside Hollywood yet. I was trying, you know, I was going to go to college and then I was going to try to act, I guess. But it was so cool to be getting toted around town with you guys. I remember one time you took me to this place for brunch. Was it called Butterfield or something?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And there were so many celebrities in there eating brunch and I couldn't believe it. It was just, I think Billy Idol was in there eating.
I think you're right. I remember Butterfield. I remember you had to walk down all these stairs. It was like a garden below Sunset Boulevard.
And like one of the Guns N' Roses, I think, were in there. It was cool.
It was very 90s because you were like you and your parents lived a really normal life, even though both of your parents are show business icons. You were like, very well brought up, very well educated. Very normal. I was blessed to know your dad and love Blythe. You know, so my Blythe sideline, Blythe Danner story is I was obsessed with Blythe when I was, she might have been my first crush.
You know that we've talked about this.
Of course.
When she was in Future World. Amazing. Which she doesn't like when I bring that credit up. Do you notice
that? Oh, that's a terrible movie. It was a terrible sequel. Why did he? Oh, God.
I want you to do, can you do the whole interview as Blythe Danner? It would be so good. It was terrible. Oh, Rob, it was terrible. But I,
she's so cute.
She's so cute. I had a book of, the book version of the script of Future World, and had a beautiful picture of Blythe in it. And I thought she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
Oh.
And then your father, Bruce, that's how Cheryl knows you, because my wife Cheryl worked for Bruce on
that came after.
Home Fires came after?
Home Fires came after.
See, this is what people don't realize, how far we go back.
So far back. I mean, way, way back. I was in high school or just finishing high school when I met you. And I met Cheryl when I was like in 10th grade, Apple's age, I met her.
Apple's age?
Yes.
Really? Okay, that
I
makes
mean,
me feel,
I've known her forever.
It makes me feel like an ancient person.
You are.
I know. But I don't look it, do I? tell me, I'm very interested in what Cheryl's expertise was in the blowjobs.
Gosh, I can't remember exactly.
Oh, who are you kidding?
No, I can't. I just remember it was less about remembering the technique, although I'm sure that I implemented it immediately, the first chance I got.
Yes, I'm sure.
But she was just, it was so cool to have someone treat me like an adult and see me as like a young woman and someone who was sexual. And she just made me feel so free. And, you know, as you said, I did have a very normal, you know, even though I came from people who worked in show business, I had a very, you know, like a non-Hollywood kind
of. Very stable, structured, like regular. Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, it was like pretty, not conservative politically, but just, you know, it was like a lot was expected of me. I had to study really hard. It was like I had, you know, so, and the gender roles were pretty defined. And, you know, my mother was.
She's very prim.
She's.
When you say, is it?
She's, I wouldn't say prim. I think she's just traditional and sort of, you know, she's like.
Yeah.
And of that era, right? Yeah, like, we didn't talk about stuff like that. So for Cheryl to be like, okay, and then hold the balls and whatever. And I was like, what is happening?
She hasn't changed a bit.
I know.
I mean, listen, let's face it. I did a lot of research when I was looking for a wife.
Oh, really? We didn't know that, Rob.
And we've been married 29 years.
I know.
And it's because I've never met anybody like her. I've never met anyone. And it's funny, I sat in Cheryl's makeup chair just as an actor, and she was my makeup artist, and that was it. And the way that she spoke to me and the way she valued me as a person and saw me as a person was different than anybody ever.
Yeah.
And
it's a beautiful quality. And she's so loving, and she's such a caretaker. And she's like, there's such an amazing like Jewish mom, and it's all the food and the comfort and everything. But then there's this just wild side to her that's so fun to this day.
Because I would never survive with somebody boring.
No, I know.
If I wasn't with somebody, and I say this with all love, a little crazy, maybe more than a little, I would run roughshod.
Yeah, no. She keeps you on your toes. Yeah. I think you guys have an amazing marriage, and like obviously, you know, I've known you guys for a long time and seen it through many chapters. And it's just so inspiring to see you both continue to make the commitment to grow together and like to keep finding honesty and new levels of authenticity and commitment and what that looks like over different decades. And I don't know. I think you guys are rad.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think it's important in life and in marriages to have friends that you can count on.
Yeah.
And that you can also see through the chapter. I mean, and the same, I've seen you through so many chapters in your life.
Beyond.
I mean, beyond.
It's crazy.
You could write a book.
I know.
And
I'll leave that to you.
Yeah.
My secrets are too explosive.
They're too good. They're so good. We bury them to the,
we bury them.
The barriers of the deepest. But even little things like your dad, I remember when you were nominated for Shakespeare. And remember when they used to have those crazy Miramax parties and everybody had to do charades?
Oh, yeah. No, those weren't the Miramax parties. Those were like, you would, like, actors. It was actually sweet. It was like actors who had won in previous years would sort of, like, host game nights for people. It was like, remember?
Yeah, it was a thing.
It was a thing. We would have these
big nights.
Game nights.
And I remember running into your dad at the one that was sort of done in honor of
that you. Helen Hunt threw for me.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think Matthew, my oldest, must have been about 5 or 6. And I must have known where the road would lead with the boys, because I said, what advice do you have for me? Because Gwyneth has turned out so great, you know, for raising my kids. Like what if they want to be actors? And I'll never forget, I call it the Bruce Paltrow rule, which is, you know, they can say they want to act all they want. They're not doing shit until they're 18.
Yeah.
You wanted to, and he just threw the hammer down.
I wanted to so badly. And people would, you know, casting directors sometimes came up to me in New York, not knowing who my parents were, you know, asking me to audition for this and I always wanted to, but my parents refused to let me into the public eye. And then finally, when I was 18, I just kind of...
Oh, it was a frenzy. I remember it. I remember it was like, the only thing I can think of, it would be like the NFL draft. And people are just in a fucking... You know who's going... Gwyneth Paltrow's being drafted first.
Oh, my God.
People are trading up to get Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, my God.
You know, and like all the agents you were meeting with, everybody knew. Like, it was... Like, the fix was so in...
But it's weird, you know, because it's like, I don't know how I feel about it ultimately, that sort of advantage that, you know, kids, it's like we get doors open for us because of who our parents are, like your sons do or my children would. And so that's why I think it's so important, you know, as you say, to raise a kid that has a work ethic and whose values are, you know, they're aligned with yours or with their own sense of who they are, et cetera. So that, you know, because the truth of the matter is like the doors can be opened for you, but if you think about all the people who try and it doesn't happen.
Yes. And that's what I mean. When I say the fix is in, it wasn't that people knew you were going to succeed because of where you came from. They knew you had the goods.
Hmm. Well, thanks.
And you had it from the first, what was the first great movie, that weird Western with...
Oh, yeah, Flesh and Bone.
Flesh and Bone.
That was a really, I love that
You're
movie.
You're great in it. It's a great movie.
It is a really good movie. It's good. It's a weird, slow burner, but I love it.
Such a good movie.
Really good movie.
But I was like, oh, yeah, she's going to be fine. She doesn't need to stay in my guest room anymore.
I still do, but...
No, you're doing right now. Nothing has changed.
I've never left
You're literally room. Back in my guest bedroom. The world
I've never left.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
Shopping for humans is hard. Shopping for your dog is easy, thanks to Bark. Every month, we deliver toys and treats just for your pup. They deserve to be spoiled every month. At Bark, we send your dog a whole collection of toys and treats made just for them every single month. Whether it's our fun plush toys or our ultra-tough toys from Super Chewer, we give your dog exactly what they want. And for a limited time, we will double your first box for free. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/Rob. BarkBox is so convenient and delivers straight to your door and, more importantly, right to your dog. I can't wait to try out BarkBox. My dogs need their toys, particularly the chewable toys. Sign up now at BarkBox.com/Rob for an exclusive offer. This ad is now over. Let's get back to petting our dogs. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crew neck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
So now, what do you do with your incredible kids who are incredible?
Thank you.
And they always have. And again, like you, always have been. Like you look at...
They're good kids. You.
Well, there's two things. They're good kids. And these are... And they're also like, they have it. Like, I mean, Moses, like charismatic, such a... Like his energy of like love and like, I'd like to eat him.
I know.
I'd like to eat him all up.
I know. It's really unbelievable.
And Apple, I mean, that charisma, if we could harness it, could power a large city. What are you going to do with that one?
Oh,
just. You got your hands full, girlfriend. I know. You better, I mean, what's the Bruce Paltrow rule look like for Apple?
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I won't let them, you know, be public on any social media or anything like that. I try to keep them out of the public eye as much as possible. You know, now it's different because kids are like, can I have a YouTube channel? I want to. And I'm like, no, you can't. No, absolutely not. But everybody else, I'm like, you're not, you know, you have this other layer and they understand. And they're, but I think with, it's really been interesting to be her mother because as she's come into her own, it's almost like, you know, it's like watching her harness her own power with every passing year. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, what is this child here to do? You know, she's so bright and so funny. And so
she's hilarious.
She's hilarious. And Moses is so unique and so deep and like such an old soul. And
yeah.
And also really talented, like scarily talented. And you're and so you start as a parent, you think, all I can do for these kids is teach them right from wrong and teach them what work is. And
how do you go about doing that? Because I do find we're both blessed with kids who have work ethic and understand work and want to work.
Yeah.
And aren't entitled. They're look,
no.
they've grown up with everything in abundance and they are entitled, but they don't feel entitled, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think first of all, you model it, right? Like you are an incredibly hard worker. So is Cheryl.
Yeah.
Cheryl doesn't have to bust her ass 24/7 on her jewelry business, but she does. So the boys have grown up with two parents who have modeled what it means to work and what work looks like and trying to do both things at the same time. And I think when you work hard and they see that and you value your work, they fuse those things and they understand that work brings value to someone's life and sense of self. And, you know, my kids work hard. I think they see their parents working hard to achieve something. And so I think that's the first part of it.
Right.
You know, we model it.
Right.
And then you make them work for stuff. You know, I really have tried not to just hand them things, which, you know, a lot of people do and no judgment, but you know, my father always made me have a job. after school until I was in 11th grade, because then there was too much homework and SAT practice and whatever. And Apple has a job. She works in retail, not currently because stores obviously are closed, right. But she came to me one day and she was like, I really want to get a job at this store. And I was like, great. Perfect. Okay. I'm totally supportive. And then I didn't hear anything about it for a while. I was like, do you need help? And, you know, in any way, she was like, no. And then a few weeks later, she came to me. She's like, I got the job. Please sign my W-2. Please sign, you know, permission. Cause I'm not, it was unbelievable.
Oh my God.
And she, that's who she is. So I don't know.
So she's a self-starter.
She's a self-starter. She really is. So, you know, I don't know. I also think that with kids, like, I read this quote once from, I think it was from Banksy, that said, a parent will do absolutely anything for their child except let them be exactly who they are.
It's so true.
Like, we come at our kids with so much projection and, oh God, if they're not like this, then it says this about me. Or I'm so worried if they don't do that, then they're going to experience the pain of life. And I've tried to adopt this thinking around it that's like, it's okay if you get hurt. It's okay if you fail. Like, I think our generation of parents got this memo. I was reading this woman, Glennon Doyle's book. It's called Untamed. And she said, our generation of parents got this memo that, like, we're going to keep you from everything. We're going to do everything we can, you know, to make sure you never feel an ounce of pain or left out. Or, you know, when the teacher calls us and says, you know, you've done something wrong, we're going to get in the teacher's face and say, I don't think you know my child. And, you know, basically that our philosophy is don't let them get hurt. And I don't know exactly what it's in reaction to. Like, I don't know how we were parented or how, you know, how it all comes together, but it really struck a nerve with me because I think we have to let our children experience life. And, you know, life is, like the first rule of Buddhism says, suffering. Like, we suffer here. It's really hard and it's part of it. And we want our children to know who they are, to have good manners, and to have resilience, right? So that's what I try to do.
Well, and I think that we come at, and I agree, it's the same. We come at that. I think the other part is, and I'm not saying anything about your parents, just from mine. I think that generation had a level of narcissism that we don't have. Like my parents were very, very self-involved and right. I felt really, really, really on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's funny because that's what Glennon says is that our parents' generation were like, their memo was.
Yeah. Okay, what was theirs?
Their memo, she says, is like, okay, we're home from the hospital. You look after yourself. I'm going to smoke and talk to the other adults and, like, don't come home till dinner.
Yeah. And you're
right?
On your own.
Like, you're on your own.
Which is also beautiful.
Yeah.
Like the days of, like, running around the yard and then coming home only when the dinner bell rang.
Yeah. I know.
The stuff my parents used to let me do.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, when I was a young actor and I moved to California from Ohio, I was 12 and we lived out on Point Doom, and we figured out that Point Doom in Malibu, the only reason we lived there was my mother was a universal allergic, or so she thought. We don't really know. I think she was just a hypochondriac. And the air quality in Point Doom was supposedly so great. That's why we moved there. But I would take the bus alone from Point Doom to Santa Monica, get on a different bus, take it from Santa Monica to Beverly Hills, get on a different bus, take it from Beverly Hills to, like, deep in Hollywood, audition, do my homework, repeating back to to Point Doom, and like we never thought anything of it.
Yeah, I mean, I moved to New York when I was 11 from Santa Monica, and I was out. I mean, I was on multiple subways going downtown to my friend Julia's house, walking the streets, you know. And then you have an 11-year-old, and you're like, wait a minute, what? I'm supposed to let you out on the subway alone? Like, this seems nuts, but I actually think there's something to it.
It is that weird thing of when you look at your kids and realize what you were doing at that age.
I know.
It's
but
shocking.
Now, I read this article of maybe 6 or 8 months ago that there was a brother and a sister, you know, maybe I want to say 5 and 7, who lived somewhere in the Midwest, and they walked to school every day. It was like, you know, half a mile walk. And people kept calling child services because they saw these kids alone walk. I mean,
that's where we are.
That's where we are.
That's so insane.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, the other thing about you, this could turn into the gooeyest love fest.
Oh God, ever I love you too, though.
Imaginable, but you 100% are the pioneer of, and I don't want to use this word I'm about to use because it's so icky.
Vagina eggs?
Well, there's that, which that's a whole other second podcast.
Okay.
You thought you were getting out of this without telling about vagina eggs. You don't know me very well. It's not reinvention, but branding is gross. I hate that word.
Why? It's okay.
It's okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'm going to say it. But I mean, I remember when you were starting Goop and when you were, like I said, we've been through it all together, but I don't think anyone has any idea how hard you have worked and work. There's no way they do. No fucking way do they know.
I think probably the only people who would know are other entrepreneurs who've started companies and go through the same kind of thing.
There have always been people starting companies, but there were not people in your position who went, oh, not only am I going to be an Academy Award winning actress, but I have this other thing that I'm going to do. Now it's almost, you almost have to do that. Mm. Like you, and it's all good. You've been a trailblazer and enabled people and shined a light so people can go, hey, there are other opportunities if you're interested and you feel like you have the goods. But before you.
Well, I feel like there were some people who had, you know, shown interest in other things and, you know, other actors who were entrepreneurial. But I think I really didn't want, you know, I didn't want to act really, you know me. I mean, I never really felt like it was at a certain point. You know, I do believe that we have chapters and we live chapters of our lives. And there was a period of time where acting was what I did and what I loved for part of it, certainly. But after I had Apple, and we were just talking about this upstairs, but I really felt like I got in touch with some other calling that I had. And I always loved business and I was always fascinated by it and always reading about it. And I didn't know when I started Goop that I would ever be able to figure out how to monetize it or that I would ever even be able to hire somebody to, you know, one person to work on it with me, let alone 250 people. And it's been the most incredible experience. I love it so much. It is so hard and so incredibly educational and expansive. And I have to be so, I start every day almost at square one, you know, just with the mindset of learning. And I just love it. It's the best, it's the most exhilarating time professionally I've ever had.
Do you feel like on any given day, I've done it? Or do you, like, how do
you? No. But I on certain given days, I'm like, I can't fucking do this anymore. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to fail. This is way too hard. I don't know what I've gotten myself into. And
you do have those feelings.
Yeah, sure. And then I have days where I'm like, oh, this feels like maybe I'm figuring this out. Maybe I've cracked this. You know, it's like you ricochet from one. It's like
I think that's so important for me to hear, for people to hear, because you always compare, like they say in AA, you always compare your insides to somebody else's outsides.
Oh, right.
So it's like, you know, one could easily think, I mean, Goop is this sort of iconic thing that you could be like, yeah, man, I did it and it's great. And the truth of it is there are days where you work up and go, man, I've bitten off a lot. I don't know.
Oh my God.
What tomorrow's going to bring.
Oh my God. It's crazy. And you,
the bigger it gets, do you feel more pressure?
Yes.
Yeah.
The more money you raise, the more people you hire, you know, you're responsible.
Was it the first money raise frightening? Or did you feel good?
No, because I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Yes.
I was like, okay, I guess, you know, we need to raise some money. And somebody else was helping me figure out what that meant. And I was just sort of trying to tell the story. And I raised my first round of seed money from this amazing group of women who just were readers of the site and who got what I was trying to do. And they weren't intimidating, and they were so loving and so supportive. So my first experience with raising money was incredible. Mm. My second, when I went to raise the Series A, that was a whole other story. I mean, that was brutal. I finally did it, but you know.
Did you have to do like a road show and stand in front of?
Yeah, basically. I mean, you're going from one VC to the next, and you're, you know, and at that point too, when a business is really young, there's, it's so risky. I mean, nobody has any idea. You're making up numbers out of thin air. You have no idea, like, if marketing ultimately is going to work or
if
product is going to resonate with people. And you're like, well, we think this is going to be the thing. Do you want to, you know? And I was going into all these VCs. They're all men. All men. And I'm talking about, you know.
Big vaginas. Now that was, you hadn't had those yet.
No, those hadn't come into play yet. But I was talking about women and what women want and what they're missing and who they are as consumers and how there's this big white space in the market. And, you know, at the time, like, clean beauty was not really a thing. And as you know, I'm really passionate about not having toxins where you can avoid them on your dermis or in your air, in your water, whatever. And men, you know, didn't totally get it. Shockingly.
They got you, I bet. They're like, I don't know what the hell this one's selling, but.
Well, I mean, it's funny. The reason that Tony Florence, who is my main investor, my biggest shareholder, he invested in the company because he had had an anecdotal experience with Goop because he sat on the board of another company that we had talked about. And after they were on, you know, he was reviewing a board deck and looking at a graph and, you know, they were sort of down towards the bottom in terms of numbers of customers they had. And then on this one day, it spiked. And those customers became really productive, high LTV customers. And he said, what happened on this day? And they said, oh, well, they talked about us on this website called Goop. So because he had experienced the power of what Goop was, he was like, ready to invest. And so he's been my biggest champion and mentor. And I got so, so lucky because I have a lot of, you know, a lot of entrepreneur friends who don't feel that way about their investors. So I got
for sure.
Yeah.
It can be not a good shotgun marriage.
Yes.
and I feel like the pressure of now it's not just your money. It's not just your time and energy.
No.
You're beholden to to other people.
Yeah.
I've seen that with Cheryl with Cheryl Lowe Designs is when she got her investors, the level of seriousness and the level of responsibility, just that pressure can be really insane.
Yes.
That's why I'm just a stupid idiot that wears makeup for a living and stands on a mark. I just did like, I'm keeping it very, very simple.
it served you well, Rob.
Yeah, it has. And the other thing is I will do anything to avoid math.
Right, then you definitely don't want to start a business because it's
anything.
It's a math nightmare. It's an Excel K-hole.
I have some kind of visual processing disorder. My son Matthew has it as well. Where when I look at certain stats on a screen, it's like
a cartoon.
It's like being dyslexic because I can read like you can't believe.
Yeah,
like I'm one of the quickest. Best readers, like off the charts crazy. But when it's like an Excel or numbers, they like move around in my eyes, like
googly eyes.
Like I get googly porky pig eyes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That would be a real problem. I need to have somebody like.
Well, you could be a founder. You just probably couldn't be a CEO.
That's for sure. No, we don't. We don't want any. Well, how was the name Goop? That was your nickname as a kid, right? Is that what it was?
No.
What was it?
So it was actually a nickname that Chris used to call me Goopy sometimes for fun.
That's great. You're so Goopy.
I know. He'd be like, hey, Goopy. Because GP were my initials and he would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then weirdly and unrelatedly, when I was trying to think about this business, speaking of branding, I went to go see this guy in New York, Peter Arnell, who was a branding master. And I said I needed help to think about I didn't want my name in it, but it would be nice if it was somehow related to me. And he just said one day, he was like, I got it. It's Goop. And I thought it was really like a terrible name. And he was like, no, trust me. And I was like, why? Goop is like, it's gross. It's like, And he said, no, you're going to reframe the way people hear the word. It's your initials with two O's in between. And all big internet companies have two O's in the name.
I love that. All big internet companies have two O's. That's the problem with Quibi. That's where they fucked up.
That should have been called Quobi.
Quibi.
So then it was born. And then I just stuck with it.
So good.
And we'll be right back after this. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at macys.com/purpose. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Rob Lowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Rob Lowe.
I want to tell the story about, because again, I've seen you through all your iterations of love.
You have.
Oh, but the God. Best was the boyfriend you brought up passed out in a jacuzzi.
Can I just say?
It's pretty good.
That I was so naive about drugs and alcohol. I mean, I still am. Like, of course I drank alcohol, but I had a boyfriend who really was like taking pills and stuff.
And you didn't know?
I had no idea. And he had taken pills, painkillers, I think.
Just the way you're saying it, I wish people could see your face. You're saying painkillers, like they're these newfangled
things you've never heard of. This was a long time ago. So he had taken a painkiller and other stuff, and we all were in the hot tub. This is at your old house in Montecito. Mm-hmm. And he got up out of the hot tub and literally like splatted on the brick.
His head hit the bricks.
Oh my God.
It sounded like.
No, it wasn't his head. It was his body hit the. Was it his
it
head?
Was his head.
Oh my God, I blocked it
out.
No,
because he had a concussion.
Oh, it was so terrible.
Because then he was seeing visions.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, maybe that was the hallucinogenics.
And then he got back in and looked at you and clearly didn't know where he was or who you were at all.
Wow.
And then looked at me and recognized me like, oh my God, it's Rob Lowe. And looked back at you and did not know you. And then slowly it all, he kind of came to and was like, oh my God, that was insane. He goes, honey, I'm so sorry. I didn't know where I was and I didn't know who you were. And then I looked at Rob and I thought, I finally made it in Hollywood. Because if I'm in a jacuzzi with Rob Lowe, it must be the best Hollywood party ever.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
So fucking.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, I had some interesting boyfriends along the way.
But your husband now, we love so much. I mean, I've loved all your guys. You have very good taste.
That's not true. You've not loved all of them.
I've appreciated all of them. No?
Yeah, okay.
But your current and your final, your husband, Brad, you know, he's my boss.
Which, how weird is that?
He's my boss.
But that happened because you were friends.
That's right. So on Lone Star, 911 Lone Star, Brad created it, wrote it for me. I knew he really wrote it for me when he wrote a firefighter who cared more about his hair than
his moisturizer.
His moisturizer and hair than saving lives. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Oh my God.
But that's what's so fun, is to be able to work with somebody like that. You know, the value of working with somebody you love,
yeah,
and a friend, and somebody who gets you and understands you. And
that is his superpower, I think, and really understanding people and really getting people.
It's true. And he's able to articulate like what someone's strengths are in a really interesting way. When we sit in casting meetings and he wants to talk about the actor that's just come in or we're maybe going to out to offer it to an established star, he'll articulate why they're right for it or not right for it in the most amazing way.
Oh, wow. See, I don't get to see his work side. I mean, I have...
But he directs you in The Politician.
Yes, which is great. But I mean,
And you're great in it. You are great in The Politician, and because it reminds me a lot of Blythe.
Yes.
A lot of Blythe going on
there. There's a little Blythe sprinkled in there.
Little Blythe sprinkled in there. Mm-hmm. You're like the hot, waspy, multi-decades younger Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey.
I've never seen Downton Abbey.
Oh, come on.
I know. I've got to get it together.
You have to get it together.
Is it great?
Do you know what it's great?
It is.
It's great.
Okay.
I mean, I know that I don't really seem like a Downton Abbey guy.
Yes, you do.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I love it.
Okay. I'm going to watch it. There are like certain series that I missed along the way.
Yeah.
That I think also partially because I was an expat in London for so long.
Yeah.
And shows would debut in America and be this huge deal. And then it would be a year till it got to London. By that point, I was so annoyed, like hearing everyone talk about how amazing Lost was or whatever, that I was like, I'm not watching this. I missed the boat.
I was in London doing a play when Lost was.
I never saw that. There's like all these big TV shows that I missed.
Well, when you see Maggie, who crushes.
She's phenomenal.
And you crush.
Okay, I'm going to watch.
So what's it like working with your husband directing you?
It's great. I mean, I just love being around him, and he's so smart and he's so soothing and he just like gets me so well. And I think I'm a pain because it's not my favorite thing to do. And
acting is not your favorite thing anymore.
No, it's not.
You're very funny about it.
I don't know what it is. I just like, I feel embarrassed and I like can't remember lines anymore.
I promise you, ask him.
Cause I used to be able to read a scene one time in the hair and makeup chair and know it perfectly. And now I struggle so much. Genuinely ask Brad. I think because I have so much in my head, you know, it's like I'm on set and I'm thinking about my business and the day's numbers and whatever, blah, 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 the issues and the people, and like I just don't have a lot of room to remember lines and stuff like that. But I swear, I know you're looking.
I don't believe it.
Okay, ask him after this.
I've only acted with you once, and you were a machine. But that was many, 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 many years.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. Now I'm like, I can't remember this fucking line. And then he writes me these monologues that are like a page long.
Just to fuck with you?
I'm like, Brad, you're killing me.
Your wedding was the greatest wedding.
Oh.
It was so beautiful.
Wasn't it fun?
She literally had Steven Spielberg filming. He was filming the wedding on his video camera.
I know. Because I thought it would be weird to have, for a few reasons. I thought it would be weird to have like a produced video with like a team of videographers. Like I feel self-conscious in front of the camera, which is part of the reason acting makes me a little uncomfortable.
No one would ever believe that. That's why people go, that Gwyneth, who she thinks you're. But it's the truth.
No, it's really the truth. Like, I get uncomfortable in front of a camera, and Stephen gets uncomfortable in social situations. So I was like, this is perfect. I'll hand on the camera. He'll be so happy. And then I'll get a wedding video out of it.
You are fucking unbelievable.
Oh my God.
He filmed everything.
He filmed the whole wedding.
It was unbelievable to watch Steven Spielberg make home movies.
Oh my gosh. But you know what? That's how I know him my whole life. All he does is make home movies. Like, if you go there for dinner and it's more than just a double date or something, he is filming it.
Really?
Always. Always, always, always. He has more home movie footage than you can possibly fathom. He always is filming. He loves it.
How has he not made that? I mean, how much would you love to see that documentary?
I know.
And he loves you so much. It's so funny to watch him with you, to watch you guys together. It's like you forget he's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
I had the greatest conversation with him about Jaws at your wedding.
You did?
I did, because I'm a huge Jaws fan. And he's like, I feel so bad about Jaws. I feel that people hate sharks, and I feel I'm responsible for it.
He is
responsible.
He's responsible for people not swimming in the ocean, like my husband, who's like scared to swim in a lake because of Jaws.
It really did traumatize a generation of people.
I'm so glad I didn't see Jaws until much later, because I love swimming in the ocean.
It's such a good, it's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Same with Brad. You know, his son Brody is named after.
Oh no, after Chief Brody?
After Chief Brody.
I never knew that.
Yes.
Come on.
I swear. He calls him Chief.
No way.
Uh-huh.
See, this is why I love your husband. He's a Jaws fan, and he's a Bruce Springsteen.
You too, and your Bruce Springsteen.
Are we the whitest?
Beyond.
Middle-aged. Are we the whitest middle-aged
beyond
guys that you know?
Yes. Painfully white and painfully
with our
middle-aged.
Bruce Springsteen power fisting.
And your football games after Thanksgiving and
the turkey. It's called the Turkey Bowl.
The Turkey Bowl.
It's not after Thanksgiving.
Well, whatever.
It's before Thanksgiving.
I'm always cooking.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying attention.
You didn't go to the. I've never seen you at a Springsteen show. Brad goes.
I've never been.
We're like broing. It's so good.
It's so upsetting. I can't even talk about this.
It's the whitest. It's the most white.
It's so white. But you know. I love that he and you, or anyone, when someone has that level of fandom about someone, it's actually so beautiful. And for him, I honestly think between Springsteen and the Red Sox,
mm-hmm.
it's religious for him. Like whatever religion provides for people, structure, meaning, emotion, you know, understanding where you are in time and space. Masculinity, like it provides him with such fullness.
Yeah.
Now that Tom Brady's gone from the Patriots,
Is he wearing a black armband?
That was a rough day in our house. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what we're going to do without sports like this. I truly,
I haven't noticed.
Do not. I mean, I'm losing my mind with all this. It's crazy. Okay, we're trying to think.
You should start cooking with me, and then you'll get your mind off sports.
I'm a terrible cook.
I know.
I'm a good eater.
I know. I've seen your quarantine baby.
Yeah, I have a. I'm pregnant with an ice cream baby. I have a quarantine baby.
You literally sat down last night and ate a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
I'm having a gender reveal for my baby next week.
What is it going to be?
I don't know, but then I'm going to paint the nursery. Because I'm definitely in my third trimester. When I look in the mirror,
I think the upside of this surreal, crazy, tragic, like indescribable time is that I feel like we're one positive aspect is we're all being a lot easier on ourselves about our bodies because we're just what are we going to do?
Yeah. No, and easier on ourselves about. That, you know, if you want to take a nap in the middle of the day, that's okay. If you want to work, that you work, you don't work. It's kind of the sky's the limit.
It's been very strange. It really has. And I just think it, you know, stillness like this brings up so much to the surface. And that's been a really interesting part, like examining what is really going on beneath all the stuff that we busy ourselves with all day.
Yeah. I'm good in my own company. I spend, as you know, when I'm here, I can sit up by the fire and just sit.
I know. And just, it's great.
And she'll be like, Cheryl's not like, my wife's not like that. I think opposites are good, right? Like she's, you don't want, I wouldn't want to be married to someone who's too much like me.
No, I think that gets hard. I mean, I think you guys share a lot of the same values, but your personalities are very different.
Right. 100% on the values. Like, yeah. I don't know how people stay married who have like legitimate differences in how to raise kids or whatever.
You're very aligned, but you just have a different way of operating in the world.
Yes. 100%. No, I've been very lucky. All right. How many times have you been on the cover of Vanity Fair?
Once, maybe twice.
But for sure, at least once.
Yes, I think twice.
So at the end of Vanity Fair, they used to have the Proust questionnaire.
Oh yeah, I love that questionnaire.
Okay, so I have my version of it.
Okay.
It's called The Lowdown. Because every hacky article ever written about me had that title.
Oh, God.
So gross, right? So this is my version of the Proust questionnaire.
Okay.
First of all, okay, let's start with this one. Rolling Stones or Beatles?
Rolling Stones.
That was fast. But most overrated Beatle?
I don't actually think there was an overrated Beatle.
Most overrated cast member Friends?
Is this really a question?
This is the Rob.
This is the Rob.
All right.
They're all great.
We can keep moving on.
But you know, the thing about Friends is, It was what it was because of each one of them. Like the chemistry of the six of them was so perfect.
You already had won an Oscar by then. You wouldn't have been auditioning by Friends, would you?
I did not audition for Friends, no.
What did you ever audition for that you didn't?
That I didn't get?
Yeah.
Legends of the Fall.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Julie Ormond part?
Yep, I got really close, like down to the wire. There's another movie I lost to Julia Ormond. What was it? It was a remake of an Audrey Hepburn movie with, it called?
Oh, yeah.
Help me.
Yes, Sabrina.
So
Julia Ormond was your nemesis.
No, that's a bit extreme, but I did lose two movies to her.
That's nemesis where I come from.
There you go.
I used to lose movies to Tim Hutton in the day. Ordinary People being,
Right.
I mean, come on.
That's a bummer.
That's as big as it gets.
But my mom always said, you know, she said, if you don't get a part, that means it's just not your part. There'll be other parts that are yours and you'll get those.
Right.
And then I felt much more relaxed about it.
It is true because when people give me shit about turning down Grey's Anatomy, you know, it's like it wasn't really like it would have been a lot of money and all of that stuff.
That's another TV show that I have to start watching. My daughter loves that show.
It's great. It's great.
You turned it down?
McDreamy could have been me. You know who reminds me of that all the time?
What? Who?
Cheryl.
I don't know what McDreamy is.
You don't know who McDreamy is?
No.
The best.
What are you talking about?
This is the best. Because this is the other thing I love about you. There's a whole part of you that literally has no idea about anything.
Oh my God. Not anything. It's like pop culture stuff. That's what I don't know about.
But you own it. Like today to not know pop culture, by the way, I could give a flying fuck about most of it too. I want to be more like you. I really do. Because you have a way of like owning your lack of interest in pop culture. Terrible. But it's true. Oh, it's awesome. God. Because usually, like, McDreamy, what is that? Like,
what is that, though?
What is McDreamy? This is the best.
What is it?
McDreamy is the leading man on Grey's Anatomy.
His name is McDreamy?
Well, that's part of the issue.
Oh.
I intuited, I think, when I had the meeting with everybody, that there was a level of objectification of men.
Oh, my God.
Because, no, of course his name isn't McDreamy. That's the objectified name. What? It's basically saying hot guy.
But in the script?
It's Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, but they wrote in the script McDreamy?
No, I don't know how it came up, but it's a thing. I'm going to have to, right? But it's a thing. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, McDreamy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Was his name like McMillan in it or something?
I don't even think so.
No, it's something normal.
Hmm, okay.
It's like Derek.
Yeah, Derek. Yeah, Derek, like Shepherd or something okay. like that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But admit that yes. Patrick Dempsey in Can't Buy Me Love was dreamy.
Well, if you think he's dreamy in that, wait till you see him in this.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because he's like a guy and his hair is amazing.
I like, okay, I got to watch it.
And then think about the money that I lost.
Oh, Rob, it's feels so bad for you.
It's conservative $70 million.
Rob, it's not polite to talk about money and don't talk about it on a podcast.
Blythe is here.
Are you crazy?
That's what he makes.
Okay.
That's dreamy money. That could have been mine. All right, back to the questionnaire. Has there ever been a cartoon character that you were sexually attracted to?
A cartoon character?
Yeah. Like, I like the female rabbit with the purple eyes and the Aristocats when I was little.
Let me think. No.
How did I know that answer?
No, I can see how a guy.
Well, we'll sexualize anything, first of all.
Right.
But
Jessica Rabbit and stuff. And yes. We have like Papa Smurf. Like, who are we supposed to get a boner over?
Paul Bunyan?
Popeye?
Somebody did, and it was a guy, recently say Porky Pig.
That's
because
really.
Because the hooves made his legs like he was wearing heels.
Stop being friends with whoever said that.
Is that the best?
It's so dark and disturbing.
Isn't it the greatest? We have to just really quickly talk about one of the great like pieces of trivia that in The Cat in the Hat.
Okay. Oh, yes.
The Cat in the Hat, Mike Myers, Cat in the Hat. Mike will be on the show at some point. He based his character on your father.
Yes. He did the best Bruce Paltrow impersonation of all time. And he used to do it to my father. And my father would cry laughing. Cry. It was so fun. That was during the period of time where we were all making View from the Top.
Yep.
Which is really not a good movie. And
it's not our best work.
No, but we had the fun. And Mike Myers was so freaking funny.
Oh, my God.
And honestly, like my dad and Mike Myers fell in love and had such this great friendship.
Those two had the most amazing.
Oh my God. And Robin, Mike's ex-wife, and my father were really close too. He loved Robin.
I just love the idea of Mike rolling into the set one day and going, so here's what I'm thinking with the character of the cat and the Cat in the Hat. He's really Bruce Paltrow.
I know.
You're like, I'm sorry.
But my dad was a great character, as you know.
Yeah. So do yourselves a favor. Watch The Cat in the Hat. Bruce Paltrow lives again.
It's true.
It's so great. So great. Darling, I love you so much.
I love you too. Thank you for having me. Tell me just briefly, like, when did you start this podcast?
So what happened was I have thought that I had like a talk show in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Ellen for a minute about taking over her show when she quit. And then the timing was never going to be right on that. So I just sort of put that to bed. And then I did the Goop podcast, the Marc Maron podcast, a couple other podcasts, and had so much fun because it was an area where people could get together and talk, and which you used to be able to do on actual talk shows before. It was like, we want you to come on and play pin the tail on the donkey.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? I'm not enough. I've worked my whole life to be entertaining and interesting. And
it is crazy. When you see clips of old talk shows like Dick Cavett and there's like weird long pauses and long stories, it's like people sat out there for 15 minutes. It was amazing.
But you got to know them.
Yeah, you did. It's true.
And you go like on YouTube and watch great appearances on Carson. They're amazing.
Yeah, it's true.
But now you get these amazing people on, and the next thing you know, they're playing it's a go-kart rally backstage. I'm like, I don't want to see Elon Musk in a go-kart. I want to.
I do, but I get it.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I love this, that this exists, that we can do that because, you know, you'd never get to talk like this anywhere other than. And the other thing is, I know enough interesting people and have had a history with enough people that I can bring out stories that there's no way anybody else will ever know. Yeah. They're fun and interesting.
That's true. Stories I only tell my friends.
The podcast version.
The podcast version.
That's exactly it. All right. Thank you.
Yay! Good job, Ryan.
Thank you. It was fun, right?
Yeah.
I love that woman so much. She is just, there's nobody like her. There's just no one like her. She's got every club in the bag. That was as good as I had hoped it would be. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I'll see you next time.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile. Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blaert. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high performance EVs. They're certainly out here there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.